Pastor Doug here from Crossroads. It's great to be with you. I hope that today's message will draw you closer to Jesus.
Crossroads, so glad you're here today. Good to be with you. We are on week two of this series called Tipping Point, and it's a stewardship series, and we are talking about like whole life steward. How can you and I, how can we be good stewards of all that God has blessed us with? It's our time, it's our talent, it's our treasure, it's everything. How can we be good stewards of that? And last week, we started out with the foundation. The tipping point of good stewardship is ownership. Because if it's all mine, if it's my time, it's my talent, my treasure, then I'm going to do what I want or what the world says that I would want. But if the ownership is really God's, what he has entrusted to my care, what he has blessed me with to be a good steward, then I'm going to consult God. God, what do you want? How would you like me to steward well? How would you like me to invest my time, my talent, my treasure? Rachel Cruz, if you're not familiar with that name, that is Dave Ramsey's daughter. Any Dave Ramsey fans in the crowd at all? A number of, yeah, there's a couple of you. Yeah, so Rachel Cruz, she says this. She says, if you do what culture says to do with all that you steward, you will get culture-like results. But if you do what the Redeemer says to do with all that you steward, you will get redeemed results. And a life that is steward well, whenever we're looking to the Redeemer to get redeemed results, it will always result in having extra. When we're stewarding well, there will be some extra time, there will be some extra talent, there will be some extra treasure. And that's the thing about generosity, and we all get this. You can't be generous with what you don't have. If you don't have any extra time, any extra talent, any extra treasure, you can't be generous with it because you can't give what you don't have. So a part of stewardship is stewarding the stuff that God gives our way, that he entrusts to us, so that we'll have some extra. And you might be saying, well, you know what, Doug? I don't have any extra. You talk about this extra. I don't have any of it. Well, maybe you're right, but not so fast. If you ever get to stop at a coffee shop, if you ever get to go out to a movie, you have some extra. If you get some screen time, maybe you play video games, scroll through social media, you binge watch TV, you have some extra time. Maybe you are helping out with your kids' sports team. You're coaching, you're volunteering, maybe a volunteer position here at church. That means you have some extra time. How about this one? If you have more clothes than what you can wear in between doing laundry, you have some extra. If you have a hobby, that means you have some extra time. If your family or your friends, maybe your boss, your teacher, ever leans in and says, hey, I'd like your help with this. I'd really think you'd be great for this. That means you have some extra talent. I want to give you some personal examples from my own life, and not all positive. For extra treasure, for me, what can that look like whenever I might go a non-healthy direction? For over two decades, I have been wearing Salomon sneakers. They are my go-to sneaker of choice. And I'd always buy them, you know, year-end, on sale, close out, whatever else. And then much like the hush puppy story I told you last week, about maybe 5-7 years ago, some fashion designers started using Salomons in their photo shoots. And all of a sudden, you know, you could barely find the sneaker anymore available in your size, and you never found it on sale. It got so bad that I had to buy like regular other branded sneakers. I had to learn how to tie my own shoes again. It was just like just awful. Time passes by, years go by, and then, okay, 20% off. That's great. I can finally get a pair again. And then, you know, my friends who are in the Salomon start texting me, Doug, Salomon's 40% off, 60% off. So every time that I would see a pair of sneakers on sale for 40, 60% off, I would buy them. And I took a picture of my closet and wanted to put it on the screen. And I thought, that's not humiliating enough, Doug. You need to literally pack up every single box of Salomons and bring them to church. This is over 4 years of sneakers that I have accumulated, right? That's what I've done with my extra. That's ridiculous. So anyone, men's, 10 and a half, anybody? Kirby? All right, let's see what you're going to get today. Oh, you got black. Nice. All right. Let us know what you think. See if you become an addict or not. We'll find out. But it's easy to get caught up in extra, isn't it? For myself, extra time, I get a lot of nice requests, and you have to figure out what all you're going to say no to. But what do you do with your extra time, your extra talent? I'm part of a ministry leadership team. It's the bishop and two other pastors. It's a way that I can use my extra talent. What about extra time when it doesn't feel like I really have any? You might know that Denise and I are big brother, big sisters. That's where our extra time goes to. When we finally became empty nesters, I wanted to start playing video games again. Denise thought there were better uses of my time than that. Those of you with a spouse understand. And we really don't like to think that we have extra. But we live in a world that has so much extra compared to the rest of the world. And even if you consider yourself poor by American standards, you really have extra compared to much of the rest of the world. Maybe you don't believe me. Well, let's look at this. Anybody ever throw away food? Anybody ever take food on a plate and put it into the garbage disposal or into the trash can? Or you've emptied out the refrigerator? You see, you've had extra. This past week, I had a block of cream cheese in a little glass dish, and it started going red. I did not know that red was a color that cream cheese could turn to, right? I had to throw away extra. There's parts of the world where that never happens. Maybe it's more like this for you. You go to the grocery store or another store like that, and you're checking out, and it says, would you like to round up? And it's to give to a local, you know, nonprofit. Whether or not you press that button, yes or no, but if you could round up, that means that you have extra. Maybe you hear about a volunteer slot here at church, and you could do it. Doesn't mean that you do it or you even should do it, but you hear about it and you think, oh, I could do that. That means that you had extra time. And Jesus talks about extra, and I want to look at an example of extra that he gives us. And we're going to be in Luke chapter 12 today. And Jesus tells a story. He tells a parable. One of his favorite ways to answer questions, one of his favorite ways to teach, Jesus tells a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, what should I do? Such a problem. I don't have room for all my crops. And then he said, oh, look, I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and I'll say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. And our natural reaction when we have extra is to use it for our own benefit. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. Now stick with me. Does that sound more like culture? Or does that sound more like the Redeemer, more like God? I have extra. Relax, sit back, eat, drink, be merry. Perhaps you don't use the take it easy, relax, sit back, eat, drink, be merry. Maybe your words are, oh, now? Now I can binge watch the show I've been wanting to watch. Now I can invest more. Now I can eat out more. Now I can do even more of what I want. Your extra might not require building bigger barns. but your extra all goes some way. Now, the agricultural society, you already get this. You know, if you're a farmer, you already get this analogy. But 2,000 years ago, like, everybody got this. Maybe it doesn't resonate as well with you. It resonates all too well with me. My father and I, these are my words, I said, had this late midlife crisis. And he went out and he just started buying farms. And then he started buying this farming equipment, all this like brand new, green with yellow stripes stuff. The issue was, my dad was not a farmer. That was not the family business that was producing all the extra. And it was so interesting that as he bought these farms, every time he bought a farm, he got to build more buildings. He got to build bigger barns. And I'd come home, this is like 30 plus years ago. I'd come home from when I was a college student at Penn State, or I'd fly in from Florida, and he wanted me to get in his truck, and he would want to drive me and show his new buildings. And at every new farm, there were new buildings, and for some reason, at every farm he built himself a new office. And I wonder, if I knew then what I know now, could have I had an influence on my father? Could I have leaned in and said, hey, God has blessed you with so much extra. And you love to build. You have a passion to build. You go to these auctions and these sales, and you buy building material on the cheap, which you then have to build more buildings for to store it in. Is there a way that you could combine that? The extra that God's blessed you with, your passion, where it really would just help someone else? Is there a way you could get involved in building for somebody that's in need? I really wish I could have had those conversations. As a 20-some-year-old, the best I could come up with was, do you really need 5 offices? It just seems incredibly inefficient. But if I could have just planted some seeds, if I could have said something else, could have I had an influence on my father and his extra? To use it in a little bit of a different direction. You're like, well, Doug, okay, that resonates with you. It resonates with the farmers in the room, but it doesn't resonate with me. All right, how about this? You don't have to raise your hand. Anybody ever rent a storage facility? That's your bigger barn. Anybody ever buy a storage shed for their property? That's your bigger barn. Maybe you say, well, okay, well, I'm good. I have not had to do that. Anybody ever open a savings account or a CD or an IRA or a money market or a, that's your bigger barn. Not bad. You got extra, but it's a tension to wrestle with. Maybe you started a new hobby. You had extra time. Not bad, but a tension to wrestle with. Maybe your bigger barn is you started a side hustle, or you started another company, or you took on more contracting positions. It's your extra talent. It's not bad, but it's something to wrestle with. Last week, the way I asked you to reply to the message is there an area where you're wrestling? Is there a tension where you're really wrestling with that ownership, trying to find the right balance? And you gave me so much good stuff, probably more than I'll get to use in this series. But one of the ones that several of you mentioned, and I tried to put words to what you talked about, you were talking about savings, you were talking about retirement, and you're trying to figure out, you know, well, like, what's the right balance? You know, I want to be able to not be a burden on my kids, so I want to make sure I have some money saved away. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to be a hoarder that whenever I die, there's like all this extra, there's all this excess. And you were wrestling with this tension. And I think that's a great tension to wrestle with. And I want to be very clear. I'm honored that you would even mention that. And I need to be clear. I am not a financial planner. You know, you do not want advice from me. I don't want advice from me. You know, that is not my gift mix. When I was a business major at Penn State, loved economics, excelled at that, did accounting just great, didn't love it, but I could do it. But then when it came to the courses on finances or insurance, oh my words, I struggled. I knew that I should never be a financial planner. But for those of you that are, you're blessed with this problem, that you're asking this question, that you're wrestling with this tension, you've probably maybe met with a financial planner. And they've taken all of your stuff, your house, your retirement, all your age, how long you want to work till, all that kind of stuff. And they put it into like a computer and it crunches in it and it gives you maybe an indicator of green, yellow, red. Like green, you don't have nothing to worry about. You can sit back, relax, and be merry. Maybe they gave you a number on a 0 to 100 scale. Maybe it was even an A, B, C, D. We don't like E, so we jump to F. Grade. And what I know for all of us, even if we've never got to do that, we want the green light. We want the high score. That's what your financial planner wants for you. As a pastor, if I was going to say in wrestling with that tension, what do you got to ask? What do you got to deal with? I'd say this. Where is trust and faith in God in that equation? We all want the green. We all want the high score because we all want to just relax, sit back, eat, drink, and be merry. But where's faith and where's trust in God with that? I don't have the answers for you, but I think it's a tension to wrestle with. It's worth your time. It's worth consulting your Heavenly Father and saying, God, here's where I'm at. What would you love me to do? And first of all, I got to note this. If that's your problem, I mean, blessing, right? 75 to 80% of the world does not have that problem. And also take some time to celebrate, because here's what I know about you. There are people that have made your same level of income or significantly more, and they've not stewarded their life well. And they have no extra. You've stewarded well, so you have extra, so you have a tension that you need to wrestle with. So don't do the culture thing. Don't make it all about I, me, what I want. But wrestle with the tension. Ask God. Because when we live the lie of culture is it's really mine. The lie of culture is it's really what I want, what I think I should do with my extra time, talent, or treasure. We fall into the same trap as this incredibly successful farmer. And let's just be honest. If Jesus stopped there, we really love this story. We'd be like, Jesus, you nailed it. That is what I want. I want to be able to say, oh, all my tomorrows are taken care of. It's time to relax, sit, eat, drink, be merry. But Jesus doesn't stop there. The parable continues. But God said to this incredibly successful farmer, but God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for? Jesus says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. And honestly, this would be an area it would just be easier if we just ignored Jesus' teaching. If we said, you know what, I want to be a Jesus follower, but I'm not going to deal with this stewardship stuff. I'm going to be a Jesus follower, but I'm just going to go the way of culture. I'm going to be a Jesus follower, but I just want to do what I want, what I think, what is best for me. Instead of embracing this tension and saying God owns it all, and God, what would you like me to do with what I have stewarded well and the extra that I have? How can I better invest my extra time, my talent, my treasure? I want to be incredibly clear. Jesus is not saying that extra is bad. Extra is good. That means you're stewarding life incredibly well. This is the lie. The lie is believing The lie is believing that the extra in our lives is all because of what we have done. The lie is believing the extra is all for our personal benefit. The lie is believing that the extra is all for our consumption or stockpiling. The lie is believing that the extra can be stewarded well without consulting God. And Jesus says, whenever we believe those lies, we're playing the role of a fool. And the farmer, in Jesus' parable, he has an I problem. Not an I problem, an I, me, my problem. Everything's about him. If you go through this parable in the original Greek, out of the 54 words in this parable, 18 of them are first person words like I, me, and my. And someone who's focused on what I want, me, my, what I think, my kingdom, all my extra, they tend to have a humility problem. I love how Rick Warren says it. He says this about humility. He says, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Humility is thinking more of others. But the culture that we live in, the lie that it wants to say is, man, it's all about you. You did this. You earned this. You deserve this. Do what you want. Be happy. Be content when you finally achieve and have all of this stuff stockpiled. And living in a me-centered culture makes it so easy to swallow the lie that it's all my extra, for my benefit, for my desires. Another tipping point that many of you indicated when you were looking at balance, when you replied to me where you're trying to manage that tension, and tried my best to figure out how to put it into words, because for some of you, this was all about time. If I have extra time, how do I know, you know, what goes to me, what goes to God or other people? Some of you, you were talking about your attitude or your viewpoint, having it all based on what you think versus trying to get a godly worldview. Maybe it was your thoughts or behaviors, but one of you used the word selfishness here. And you realize there's been a selfishness piece that you have been dealing with. You've been wrestling with that tension, just not ignoring it or justifying it. And you took it to God. Let me give you some of the words that you shared with me. You said this might be beneficial to other people, and I so think it is. This is part of your tipping point story. Around the beginning of November, I finally heard God tell me that I was being selfish. I felt him telling me that I was focusing on the wrong things and needed to readjust my view. I needed to put him at the center and not myself. Once I changed my view and focus, there was this huge weight lifted off of me. I quickly noticed how things began to change for the better. I'm much happier than I have been in a while, and I'm a better spouse. Well, I would like to say that it has been smooth sailing. I am human, so I have days where I struggle and need a little reminder. But those moments are few, and I'm quickly able to refocus. I'm still waiting for God to answer some questions, but I am more patient and trusting as well. You've managed the tension, you're dealing with it, you're taking it to God. You're saying, God, here's where I'm wrestling with. It's so easy for me to be me-focused, but I know that that's not where you want me to be, so what does it look like in my life to look to you first and to consider others as well? I want us to go back to the Big Barns story. The successful businessman had put his trust in stuff. The farmer was busy pursuing more stuff and the comforts of this world, not on pursuing God. His primary focus was where? On himself, not on God, not on others. He went to himself for wisdom and direction. He gave himself credit for everything good that came his way. God wasn't even on his radar. And that's why he's a fool. That's what poor stewardship is about. The main reason the successful businessman is considered a fool is that he made plans only for this life, but not what comes after. His focus was on his own kingdom on this side of eternity. God was not in his life. He didn't consult God. He didn't give God the glory. He didn't consider God at all. I want us to go back to this story, but a little bit earlier in the story. Why did Jesus tell this story? What question was Jesus answering with this story? What brought about this teaching on extra? Go back to Luke 12 and just a little bit earlier. This is how it all started out. Someone called from the crowd, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." And Jesus replied, "Does it say moron on my forehead?" No, Jesus replied, "Friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that?" Then he said, "Beware, guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own." This is the situation that caused the story, the teaching of the bigger barns. Now, here's what we know. We don't have all the details, but there's obviously some kind of a dispute over family stuff, some kind of an inheritance issue. Their father had passed away, and now there is this disagreement about who gets what. And Jesus wants the man wants Jesus to weigh in on the situation, to tell his brother what the right thing is to do. And Jesus says, "No thanks. Not with a 10-foot pole. Not gonna touch that one." And Jesus takes this man's request, yelled over the entire crowd, and he turns it into a teaching moment. And he says, don't get caught up in who gets what. Don't focus on the stuff that your earthly father had. And Jesus gives these words of wisdom. Beware. Be on the lookout. Guard against every kind of greed. And I have to wonder, this man in the crowd, did his dad build bigger barns? Did his father have a lot of extra that whenever he passed away was causing a division, a quarrel between his kids? Did this person's father have a me, a my, an I problem? Instead of resolving the situation or answering the man's request to settle estate distribution, Jesus offers a warning. Don't make the same mistakes your father did. Don't believe the lies of this world and play the role of a fool. Life is not measured. Go back one slide. Life is not measured by how much you own. Some of you need to hear this. Your self-worth is not tied to your net worth. And can you believe this truth? Life is not measured by how much you own. Let's read these words in yellow together. Let's just really embrace this truth of Jesus. Can you say it out loud? Life is not measured by how much you own. Now, I want us to do that again, but I want us to make this incredibly personal. Let's replace the you with the I. Out loud, everyone. Life is not measured by how much I own. Do you believe that? Do you understand that truth that Jesus teaches so incredibly clearly? Let's tie this all together. Let's just do a heart check. What you do with your extra is an indicator of whether or not you believe that life is measured by how much extra you have. If it's all me, my, it's an indicator of what's going on in your heart. What you do with your extra is an indicator of whether or not you believe that life is measured by how much extra you have. Want to close with this. On your connection card. This is for you to contemplate, but I'd love you to discuss it. Maybe, you know, with your family, your spouse, your kids, some friends, your small group. Why don't you spend some time thinking of someone who stewards their life well? What are they like? What are their priorities? What do they do with their extra? What can we learn from them? Let's pray. Father, we just admit it up front. It is so easy that whenever extra comes our way to think it is all ours. There's even parts of us that, man, we want to be able to say what that farmer said. Oh, my words. I have more than enough of my days to come. It's time to relax, sit back, take it easy, eat, drink, be merry. And all the focus becomes on us and the things of this world, the things that culture tells us to desire, and we just totally take our eyes off of you. And whenever we do that, we admit that we play the role of a fool. Help us to avoid the lies, to not fall into that trap. For some that are sitting here, they needed to hear that truth of Jesus speaking, that life isn't measured by what we got. Their self-worth is not at all connected to their net worth. The way you see us, the way that you work in our lives, is not measured by the accumulation of stuff or wealth. So may we humbly kneel before you, our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Can we look at the extra in our life and just ask you, God, what do you want us to do? Got a bit of extra time. I got a little bit of extra talent. I have a little bit of extra treasure. What would you love me to do with that? Can we keep you at the center of our lives and look to you first and foremost for how you want us to steward all that you have entrusted and blessed us with? We commit this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks again for listening. Any step you take towards Jesus is a step in the right direction. You can find out more about us at crbic.org. That's crbic.org.